From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Ed Morin with the news on This Day in Maine, Wednesday, April 29th, 2020. There are 16 new cases of COVID-19 in Maine, and one more person has died, according to figures released by the Maine CDC. The total number of confirmed cases is now 1,056. There have been 52 deaths. A shelter in Bangor is coping with an outbreak of 17 cases of COVID-19. The cases were identified after a universal testing protocol was implemented following four earlier cases at the Hope House shelter dating back to April 18th. Dr. Noah Nesson, Chief Medical Officer at Penobscot Community Health Care, or PCHC, which operates the shelter, says a number of people have come through the shelter over the past 2 weeks.
And we've been able to contact all of them and test all of them, which is a testament to the relationship that our staff has there with the people that they serve.
PCHC CEO Lori Dyer says the shelter has been operating at capacity for the past several weeks and has no plans to close. She says staff have implemented twice-daily health screenings, mandatory face masks for all, and spread residents out among the shelter and an auxiliary location. Those testing positive are being quarantined at a local hotel. As of late Wednesday, PCHC was still awaiting the results of two tests. 8 cases of COVID-19 have been confirmed at Tyson Foods in Portland. Maine Center for Disease Control Director Dr. Nirav Shah says none of those 8 employees are currently working, but the food processing plant remains open so that his agency can perform universal testing.
We are working with the facility in order to find a way to idle the plant so that workers can still show up, maybe not do the job that they previously would do, but perhaps something else, and still have an opportunity to discharge our first goal, which is to get everyone tested.
Shaw says Tyson Foods is cooperating with the CDC. The annual TD Beacon 10K road race, which draws thousands of runners to Cape Elizabeth in August, has been canceled. In a press release, organizers say ongoing COVID-19 concerns prompted the cancellation, as well as updated guidelines released yesterday by Governor Janet Mills.
Hi, Jennifer Rooks here. As you know, Maine Calling has focused our programming this past few weeks to coverage of the coronavirus crisis. We've talked to the CDC, the governor, experts in finance, healthcare, and more. If you missed one of our shows, you can always find all of our past programs at mainecalling.org. Maine Calling, online anytime at mainecalling.org. Thanks for listening and stay safe.
This Day in Maine is made possible by Modern Pest Services, committed to taking an intelligent approach to pest control. Learn more at modernpest.com. And by the Dempsey Center, making life better for people managing the impact of cancer. Locations in Lewiston and South Portland. DempseyCenter.org.
Maine Governor Janet Mills yesterday released her plan to restart the state economy, but there's still a lot of questions about how it might work and how it affects businesses. We've brought in Maine Public's chief political correspondent, Steve Missler, to help explain what we know so far and hopefully clear up some confusion. Steve, the first phase of the governor's plan begins on Friday. It would allow businesses like hair salons, barbershops, golf courses, and auto dealerships to reopen if they're able to meet certain health and safety guidelines. Do we know what those guidelines are?
No, Ed, but we should very soon. The Mills administration says they're developing a series of industry-specific checklists that will be posted to the Department of Economic and Community Development website Wednesday night or Thursday morning at the latest. And Heather Johnson, the commissioner of DECD, said Wednesday that those checklists were partially developed by affected industries so that the state wasn't just imposing regulations that either couldn't be met or just aren't applicable. For example, a sample checklist for car dealerships includes things like sanitizing vehicles after a test drive or making sure there's distancing in the service waiting rooms. Those type of checklists are being developed for all of the affected industries. And another important thing to highlight here is that these checklists will be rolled out as we get closer to different phases in the restart plan. For example, we're unlikely to see the safety checklists for restaurants until later in May, because those establishments wouldn't even be allowed to open until phase two, which is tentatively scheduled for June 1st. The same goes for all businesses in phase three, which tentatively begins in July or maybe even August. And of course, all of this depends on the status of the outbreak. If we have another surge of cases, the timing of this phased restart would definitely change.
Yeah, I've been wondering about how these checklists are going to be monitored. Is the state going to be policing whether businesses are actually adhering to these safety guidelines?
No, not at least on the front end. Commissioner Johnson confirmed today that the state is basically leaving it to the businesses to police themselves. And if you think about it, I'm not sure there's any other way to do it unless the state is going to hire a bunch of people to inspect individual businesses. Now, Johnson did say that the state will intervene if there are complaints, but in terms of upfront compliance, that's really going to be up to the businesses themselves, and I guess to their customers, who presumably have an interest in keeping themselves safe.
Speaking of enforcement, I noticed that the governor's plan pretty much retains the current requirement that out-of-state visitors self-quarantine for 14 days, at least through the first three phases of the plan. But how's that going to work in practice?
Yeah, you've really touched on a tricky situation here. So the governor's plan says that out-of-state visitors can stay at hotels and campgrounds, which wouldn't open up until June at the earliest, if they've met that 14-day quarantine, which is in effect now. But who's going to come to Maine and, you know, quarantine for 14 days somewhere and then go to a hotel or a campground? I'm guessing not many people. It seems more likely that they're going to ignore that quarantine requirement or not come at all. And that latter scenario is a big concern for businesses that are dependent on tourists, who on average spend about 3 or 4 days here, according to state data. The former scenario, that they come anyway and ignore the quarantine, is a scary prospect for people who are already worried about tourists coming here and possibly spreading more of COVID-19. Now, Governor Mills acknowledges that the requirement will be difficult to enforce, but I also get the sense her administration is exploring other ways to balance the health concerns against businesses who are dependent on tourists. Here's what Commissioner Johnson said about the quarantine requirement today.
Right now, a 14-day quarantine is kind of the only solution or the primary solution. We see line of sight to other potential solutions, but there's a lot of science that needs to happen between now and then.
So it sounds like the administration is looking at possible alternatives to the 14-day quarantine, which I understand was developed because that's believed to be the incubation period for the virus.
Yeah, that's right. If there's research that the incubation period is actually shorter, then maybe the administration would change the current requirement. But I think we're a pretty long ways off from that, Ed.
Steve, I've also been wondering about this badge that the state would give to businesses that followed their safety checklists. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, Ed, because I've been seeing so much social media traffic suggesting that these badges, which are more like signs or posters, are basically some kind of big government tattoo or worse. But it's really not. I mean, the badges are voluntary for the businesses to use, and they're really meant as a tool for businesses to assure customers that they've satisfied these health checklists that we talked about earlier. And that might make a lot of sense for some business owners attempting to restart during a pandemic, right? I mean, so much of the debate about reopening the economy has been about whether the government will even allow it. But it's also about whether customers will feel safe enough to participate and patronize businesses. And that's going to be a big challenge for businesses. And these badges might provide some reassurances for their customers.
I know there are a lot of other questions swirling out there, Steve, but maybe that's to be expected.
Yeah, I think that's right, Ed. I mean, much of this plan is very much a work in progress, and that's because so much of this work has never been done before. And that was a message that Maine Center for Disease Control Director Dr. Nirav Shah said during Wednesday's press briefing.
These are questions that at no time, at least in modern history, has society ever really faced.
That seems like something to keep in mind as all of this unfolds, Steve. Thanks for helping us understand some of this.
You bet, Ed.
And that was Maine Public Chief Political Correspondent Steve Missler. More than 100,000 Mainers have filed for unemployment since March. That's just one of the many wide-ranging economic effects of COVID-19. The claims have overwhelmed the Department of Labor in Maine. And while the state has been able to get benefits to more than 70,000 people so far, many are still waiting. Robbie Feinberg reports.
Like thousands of Mainers, Tammy Stone was laid off from her job in mid-March. She was a night cook at a restaurant in Windham, but COVID-19 forced it to close.
I was devastated. You know, it's going to be a significant pay drop for me. So I'm devastated over it. I'm scared, and I just don't know, you know, what's going to happen.
As soon as she heard the news, Stone applied for unemployment insurance. But more than a month later, the benefits have yet to come. The mother of two from Casco has struggled to navigate a system that's been overburdened with more than 100,000 claims since the pandemic began. Stone says her application was held up because of an issue reporting her wages, but she's kept filing and sending paperwork. Every day she calls the department, sometimes hundreds of times, trying to speak with a specialist so she can resolve the case. Without the assistance, she says, she's having a hard time trying to pay for food, housing, and essentials for her children.
I just wish that somebody could contact me and, like, let me know where I'm at in this situation. What do I need to do? Like, somebody, am I just lost in the system? Is what it makes me feel like.
I mean, this crisis is across the country showing the weaknesses and the fault lines and the holes in our social safety net as a whole and unemployment insurance in particular.
Matt Schlobohm is the executive director of the Maine AFL-CIO. He says that while the state has done an admirable job getting payments to tens of thousands of people over the span of just a few weeks, his organization has heard from many who are still waiting. Those include self-employed workers, those who've run into issues around monetary eligibility, and others who may have made small mistakes on applications. 20-year-old Hope Hartsgrove of Newport says she's yet to receive her benefits because of an insufficient wage claim. She says an appointment with the department was originally scheduled for June.
My question is, what am I supposed to do till June? You know what I mean? Like, you're going to fit me in for June, but the problem is right now.
Maine Labor Commissioner Laura Fortman says the state unemployment system has faced unprecedented demand over the past few weeks. Additional staff have been brought in to handle claims. The department is also contracted with a call center, and staff are working nights and weekends. The department also announced last week that it was waiving fact-finding interviews for about 20,000 cases. Fortman says about 5,000 of those claims were approved, 7,000 were denied, and the rest are receiving expedited reviews. Fortman says that process will continue through the end of May.
But what this did was it provided some certainty for people who were in that holding pattern.
And Fortman says residents who have been ruled ineligible for state unemployment are likely eligible for the Federal Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program, which will begin accepting applications on Friday morning.
And since their information is already in our system, we are not making them go through a reapplication process.
The program will also cover independent contractors and self-employed residents, including farmers and fishermen. Matt Schlobohm with the Maine AFL-CIO is encouraged by those actions and says he's heard from several laid-off workers that have had their claims resolved. But he hopes these issues highlight the need to invest in a more modern system that covers more workers and offers more administrative support.
And we need to adequately fund these programs at the administrative level to work smoothly. And I think one of the things that will come out of this is that the urgency, the need, and the push to strengthen and improve an unemployment insurance system for the 21st century will really take root and will happen, not as fast as we need it to, but it will happen and it will make a big difference going forward.
In Casco, Tammy Stone is still waiting for unemployment assistance. Stone says she's been forced to ask for help online to pay for heat and cover other bills.
Just a cord of wood is $175 to $225. My bank, my lights, my phone, I mean, my daughter's essential items, essential items for our home.
In the meantime, Stone says she's still calling the state, hoping her claim can finally be resolved. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Robbie Feinberg.
Holden Police Chief Chris Greeley makes it a habit to give out his cell phone number to residents in his community. But during the recent pandemic and the governor's stay-at-home order, Greenlee's been taking additional steps to try to connect with the people he serves by reaching out and calling those who may be especially vulnerable.
I started by reaching out to people that I knew, maybe pastors of churches, older folks, maybe people with disabilities, people that I knew maybe had been struggling, recently widowed people. I mean, really, and even just people that I knew just in general. I started with phone calls, maybe text messages. When I could do so safely, I would even stop by somebody's house and, you know, talk to them from a safe distance or through a window just to see how they were doing. Some folks were surprised or are surprised. I continue to do this every day, that, you know, the police chief is showing up just to see how I'm doing. I mean, anytime I'm a cop and I see a police car behind me, I get nervous, you know. So the police car's in your driveway, you might be thinking, why are the police here? But, of course, in this small town where I've been here for so long, a lot of folks, you know who I am. And I literally would just say, look, no emergency, no problem. I just want to see how you're doing. Just want to see if you're okay, if you need anything. Generally, people are great. Everybody's been very polite. Sometimes, though, people have said to me, you know, I'm concerned about this, I'm concerned about that, I'm feeling really lonely, I'm feeling isolated, I'm concerned about getting food. And in some circumstances, it would lead me to where I could help link them up with a service or food or get a donation or something like that. I do think of one woman who lives, she's in her 60s, lives alone in a rented mobile home. She's never had a driver's license. And I've known this woman because we do go there for medical calls, and the place is a little bit disheveled. And when I called her, I reached out to her, and I said, hey, how are you doing for food? And she said a local business had actually dropped off a box of food to her. And I said, well, what are you going to do after that? And she said, I'm not sure. I really don't know what I'm going to do. So I called the Eastern Area Agency on Aging and said, can you guys set her up with a delivery, for lack of a better term? And they're like, yeah, she's not on the list, but we can add her and we can make sure that happens. It wasn't anything I paid for, but I was able to coordinate that box of food delivery that'll help her out for a couple of weeks. And then here pretty shortly, I'll call her again and just see how she's doing. So, you know, sometimes it's me that is sort of the face of it, but it's the community support that really makes all this work.
That's Chris Greeley, chief of the Holden Police Department, who's been calling up members of his community to see how they're doing during the ongoing pandemic. His story was produced by Susan Sharon. If you or someone you know has a story to share, email us at tellmemore@mainpublic.org and let us know the best way to reach you. And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainpublic.org. And join us tomorrow on Maine Calling at 1 for the month in review. I'm Ed Morin.